initially, people were not very much aware about COVID, although we were reading in news, and then it started cases in Bombay and then Pune. But for common public, they were not very much aware. But after announcement of lockdown, there was like huge fear. And as the migrants started coming back, there was a lot of stigma associated with COVID. And every village, almost every village, had migrants coming back. And here, they were not from Maharashtra or from outside. Most were from Raipur. But whenever they were coming back, they were quarantined, and there was like a lot of fear. The family members or friends who returned to their villages, they were denied. They had to be isolated. There was like very much scare in the village. There was a lot of stigma. Like a lot of villages, they put on barricades by cutting down trees, or by they tied ropes to the trees at the entrance of the village. There were like posters written ki now also we can see them ki धारा 144 चल रही है, बाहरी व्यक्ति का गांव में प्रवेश वर्जित है, लाइक दैट. तो दिस वाज लाइक आई वुड से अ डिविजिव थिंग इन द सोसाइटी, इन द रूरल सोसाइटी, व्हिच इज लाइक वेरी कोहेसिव. एंड दैट स्टिग्मा एंड फियर ऑफ डेथ एंड फियर ऑफ अननोन, एंड आल्सो इफ समवन हैज गॉट कोविड दैट टाइम द पॉलिसी वाज they were being shifted to a district hospital. So that fear of going to an unknown place with unknown disease, no one was allowed to see a patient. So all of that created a lot of stigma. And along with migrants who returned, the isolation centers were not very well equipped. There were like a lot of snake bite deaths happened in the quarantine center. So actually these quarantine centers were school building. They were converted into quarantine centers. So they were never meant for residential thing. So all these school buildings were mainly students used to come in the morning, have their classes and go home. So as the need arose, all of them were converted into these quarantine centers. And the toilet facilities were very poor. The food there was not good. And also with lockdown, there was a lot of trees and all bushes around the windows, and windows has to be open because of good ventilation. So all of it led to snake bite.
Oh, that's
Again, a
interesting.
stigma. So I think this must be a new problem, or a problem specific to Chhattisgarh, that many people died of snake bite and not of COVID. The COVID was there mostly in urban areas and in the families where there were gatherings like marriages and all. But in our villages, there were like very few cases we saw. We were monitoring, we were training our health workers. So our response to this was we initially designed one flip book, like 6 ways to prevent corona. Corona se ladne ke liye achhi hatiyar. And then we trained our health workers, and they were going door to door and giving one pamphlet to the family and explaining what it means. And all these things were new, like masking, hand washing, distancing, and it was very like different for a rural society. And it was for something. Some unknown fever which were not seen in the villages as well. So there were like also rumors ki ye corona kuch nahi hai, ye toh sarkar ne kuch nikala hai. And there was like huge blow on the livelihoods and education. So all of a sudden there was no jobs. This MNREGA work was not there. Children were at home. They don't know like what will happen to exams, and lot of panic. And with that, there was like severe restriction to travel. So anyone cannot move out. We have seen patients coming to hospital spending like initially they when there was very much fear, people spent like 15,000 rupees or 20,000 rupees to reach to the hospital. So entire like year's earning was spent on transport. So that was one major thing. And if we see the numbers, our tuberculosis new diagnosis rate reduced to half. This is just to exemplify. So that means like that doesn't mean there was no tuberculosis. There was still a lot of cases of tuberculosis, but people couldn't reach to hospital. So that's why these cases reduced to half. And ultimately, like when these lockdowns sort of got released, a lot of patients came back afterwards. All our chronic diseases patient, they were like they were finding very difficult to reach to hospital. So we started like mobilizing medicines to their home in different ways. So in different districts, our teams went and we packed their medications and then delivered it to their home. So this fear was really there. And like sometime our team also faced that like कि आप ही लोग कोरोना लेके आओगे अभी गांव में तो कोरोना नहीं है. So even like we work with the community for 20 years, but that stigma was there. Lot of women started delivering at home only because they were scared to go to the hospital because they thought कि अस्पताल में जाएंगे तो कोरोना हो जाएगा, तो घर में ही डिलीवरी कर दो. ऐसे तो ऐसे भी था. एंड विथ अवेयरनेस स्लोली स्लोली वी स्टार्टेड बिल्डिंग वॉलंटियर नेटवर्क्स इन द विलेजेस बाय कॉन्टेक्टिंग विथ इन्फ्लुएंशियल पीपल. सो इन फ्यू ऑफ द विलेजेस वी स्टार्टेड दीज वॉलंटियर कमिटीज एंड दे वर डूइंग फीवर सर्विलेंस वीकली, ऑल्सो स्प्रेडिंग दिस अवेयरनेस एंड स्पेसिफिकली टारगेटिंग हाई रिस्क पीपल. वी वर डूइंग देयर वाइटल चेक एवरी वीक and advising them to get vaccinated whenever vaccine is available. So that was one thing. This doing vital check achieved mainly two purposes. One was a lot of volunteers learned actually how to do vitals, how to do pulse oximetry, how to take blood pressure. And this was very useful during the second wave, which actually reached to villages. And a lot of our health workers were down with the fever. But these volunteers who learned these skills at that time, so they were there and they were taking vitals for the people. So community did not suffer a lot. So that was one major learning that we learned that these skills are transferable and even to lay public if they are mentored well, if they are trained well. So that was a very interesting learning for us. And then another thing was this transport, because initially in first wave we faced a lot of difficulty. The 108 services were very busy, so we tried identifying vehicle from the local community itself. We trained the owner and drivers of the vehicle for vehicle sanitization. We provided them this solution for disinfection, and then we trained them in these six ways to prevent corona, like how to protect themselves while transporting a patient. So that was very helpful. And in second wave, we got very much advantage that a lot of our patients, they travel by the vehicles of their own villages. And they like people really came forward. And this was very opposite picture that we saw in cities where people were charging a lot. Like even for 5 kilometers, 10 kilometers, there was like 5,000 rupees, 10,000 rupees ambulance charges. But these volunteer committees and community engagement really helped us in the second wave. So that was one another thing. And although like we paid them for their charges, but that critical time to reach hospital, that was very less. And it also helped us deliver services better, plan services better. Because there was no calls, like we are not getting ambulance, so like that. So that time in till December we continued our surveillance. So when the cases started coming down, we slowly shifted our focus to our regular activities. So last year also in our regular activities we redistributed them. So like we reduced our ANC, reduce means matlab we instead of doing one ANC clinic, we did two ANCs at one village. So instead of calling them at one place, we used to go and do the clinic at two places. Same for Purwari, which is under three program with us. So we stopped calling children to the crèche. Instead, our village health worker, our Purwari worker used to distribute egg and khichdi to the homes of the children. So that we started. And also for this non-communicable disease, for people with hypertension, diabetes, COPD, asthma, epilepsy, mental illnesses. For all these patients, we started, instead of doing meetings together, we started going to their homes and distributed medicines at their homes. So these were like some of the modifications we did, along with staff training for use of PPE. There was very strict protocol for us. Like whenever there was fever for anyone, they were isolated. And actually, like now we can see that was a very good practice. So when the second wave actually hit, all these things that were being practiced in the first time, they actually saved a lot of efforts, and I would say saved a lot of lives also. So after January, February, March, 3 months were a little quieter. So end of March, we started seeing fewer cases again. Then in the March, in the April, there was like surge. A lot of patients, every villages had about 20-25% of the population down with the fever. And then at that time, we were doing vital monitoring for every fever case. So whenever our health worker used to go, and we never said like we are doing corona ke liye monitoring, because when people hear corona, they won't come up tell us ki bukhar hai. So that's why we always use this word bukhar only. We monitored their oxygen saturation, and whenever the saturation was below 93, we referred them to our referral center. So we in a population of 44,000, we came to know about 2,000 fever symptomatics. This is with the caveat that people will tell to our health worker only when there is fever more than 3 days. So people with less than 3 days symptom, they won't come forward, because they will think this is not something else, this is a routine fever. So, and of that, we identified there were abnormal vitals in about 200 patients, and we had we introduced another level of supervision, because we couldn't train our health workers at a place at the monthly training because of lockdown, and also because of crowding restrictions. So the supervisor used to cross-check every new patient and whenever there was abnormal vitals. So around 105 patients we found were having abnormal vitals. This is for the month of April. April and May also, May till May 22nd. We transported about 60 patients to Gandhiari. A lot of them actually refused, and the reasons were interesting. So we found that a lot of people who were aging and they were termed like aged at very early age. So I would say like someone with 50 years, if he is not able to work, and then he has a respiratory symptom, then family will say, okay, hum hospital nahi leke jayenge kyunki zyada fayda nahi lagta hai. So that was one thing. But the main reason was the fear of being isolated in an isolation ward. If the death happens there, then the dead body was not handed over as per government protocol. So I would say, this is still a question in front of us, how much infection transmission happens with a non-breathing dead body. But I would say with surety, like a lot of our patients did not come to hospital with this scare of not a dead body not given back. And initially, also I would say this message of started going to hospital only when there is a respiratory distress. So this should be different in rural areas, because what we saw in first week, there was actual respiratory distress, the saturation would be less than 70%. When these patients reached to the hospital, they required more days and their outcomes were poorer. So then when we actually started doing 6-minute walk test and oxygen saturation cutoff of 93%, then the outcomes started getting better. एंड इनिशियली पीपल विल ऑल्सो से कि अस्पताल जाने से कोई फायदा नहीं है, वहां जाके कोई नहीं बचता है, एंड विच वॉज ट्रू बिकॉज वेन बिकॉज ऑफ फिनोमेना ऑफ हैप्पी हाइपोक्सिया पीपल वुड नॉट रीच इन टाइम विद द ऑनसेट ऑफ ब्रेथलेसनेस. इन अर्बन एरियाज दे माइट बी रीचिंग इन टाइम एंड दे विल गेट ऑक्सीजन, बट इन रूरल एरियाज लॉट ऑफ पीपल विल नॉट रीच टू द हॉस्पिटल, और इवन इफ दे रीच दे विल रीच इन अ वेरी बैडली I would say in a medical language more than 2/3 lung involvement, then they will ultimately require ventilator. That that time even finding a bed was difficult, so that 1 week was real trouble for us. So like in terms of data, we could admit only 1/3 of the patients that came to us. So we have got total we admitted at that in that 15 days 35 patients, and we have to send back 70 patients. So total 105 patients were came to us, and these were patients which require means which will benefit from medical care, and they were like few patients who were like so sick and gasping that we just told them to take this patient home because they were not space in the hospital and in any hospital. So like these patients were on palliative protocol. That 2 weeks they were like very horrible. And like lot of people also learned there's no use of going to the hospital, and then we have to combat with that myth again. And we actually like visited every patient in the village at their home. Health workers actually did a very good job. They went checked saturation, and then after that the outcomes were very good. And every patient was seen for continuous 10 days till the symptoms relieved. So that was it. And the referral I described, so that really helped us. And then the secondary care we started here for COVID. Initially, last year, we did not admit patient here in our hospital. So we used to refer patients to district hospital here, which was a dedicated COVID hospital. So that also in the community, that was the message ki ganiyari mein jaoge to wahan hi bharti karenge, aage bhej dete hain. So and people really did not have that much of faith in government system, they were not ready to go. And one also reason was one was faith and second was the distance. So they were very these district hospitals were very far from their homes. They were not allowed to see the patients there. While in our hospital, in first week, we also tried restricting the patients, but we saw the patients are worsening, they are getting depressed. And in the second wave, the family would have been already infected with COVID. So we relaxed that restriction. We allowed them to go visit the patient, obviously with the mask and all protocol. But that I think was helpful, that patients could see what care they are getting, and then they were happy.
What was the kind of problems you faced with oxygen supply, for example, and how critical was availability of oxygen to saving lives?
Yeah, so fortunately we had got oxygen concentrator already. So whenever the oxygen requirement was less than 5 liters per minute, we used to ship the patient on oxygen concentrator. So that was not a very big problem for us. In Chhattisgarh actually has a lot of steel plants, and all that oxygen was diverted for the medical oxygen. So in terms of oxygen, we did not face a lot of problem. But real problem was like convincing people to come to the hospital because of phenomenon of happy hypoxia. And because of this dead body protocol, so that was the thing. And in private care was very costly for all the patients. So like no one was willing to go to the hospital.
So basically people were trapped between having to go to government hospitals, which they did not trust very much, and hospitals which were too expensive.
Yeah, so actually, and we also did not want it, that distrust to continue. So we helped here block level hospitals to set up like oxygen beds. And we also trained them with our protocols that we were following. Actually, we have a high dependency unit level care, but for these hospitals, we told them like, you can manage just oxygen beds and these are the protocols for you. We trained them, and there was one doctor also who was going and supervising them. So we tried to bridge that gap, at that trust gap, because in long term that is not good.
Was there a role of informal doctors at all in this? Are there a lot of informal?
Yeah. That was interesting. Actually, when we first started asking patients to come, and we were explaining them this phenomenon of happy hypoxia, but lot of them then they were like, "Hamare karyakarta to bol rahe hain ki aspatal jana hai," but they were not feeling anything. They went to a lot of them went to informal practitioners, and there were two deaths that happened with the informal practitioners, and there was one informal practitioner also who got COVID and he died. So we also trained them. So we actually, in total, we had three different types of meetings with them in each of our clusters, and about 20 informal practitioners we trained them. So, and we also asked them, like, from where do you get your knowledge? So most of them were learning from either WhatsApp or newspaper, and WhatsApp had a lot of misinformation, and some of them were asking the doctors where they usually refer patients, and they were using like lot of steroids. It was unindicated, and that was in the early stages, which is actually harmful. So after our training, and no one had knowledge about using PPE, knowledge about the proper distancing, and a lot of them did not have pulse oximeter. So we provided them pulse oximeter. We provided them contact number for contacting us, and provided them for PPE. That was very interesting. And like 3-4 patients were saved because they were referred to us by informal practitioners. So their involvement is very much important. And there were like a lot of other organizations also which were not working in health earlier, but they also requested us to help their staff to act as a frontline workers.
Was there a difference in the age groups affected in the first and second wave? The second wave, more younger people were also affected?
So, no, in rural areas, there was not much difference. Actually, first wave also, people with higher risk and older people died. And in second wave, as vaccination did not reach rural areas, so there was not much difference, I would say.
Okay. But in the urban areas, there must have been a difference.
Yeah, and still I see if there is a third wave, in rural areas, we will still see older people with the high risk groups, because the vaccination percentage is very less as compared to urban areas.
Right. Now, I got some reports from Uttar Pradesh and all. This was in May beginning. Mm-hmm. Babies dying, you know.
Mm-hmm. We also saw a few babies dying. They came with shock and like what we call multi-system inflammatory syndrome of children in COVID. We saw that. Like not many children, I would say.
But that was all the COVID deaths, but...
Yeah.
Okay.
Unfortunately, the diagnosis facilities are very in the rural area. Someone coming with shock and died immediately, we also could not diagnose them.
Sorry, that was not clear. Can you repeat? Your voice faded.
So someone coming in a shock and died within like 15-20 minutes of coming to the hospital.
Oh.
So shock means like unrecordable blood pressure, cold extremities, and like gasping breathing.
In terms of the treatment protocol, the Ministry of Health and ICMR, All India Medical Institute, they had their own guidelines from the beginning of the pandemic. What was the protocol that you were using based on your own experience?
Yeah, so since start, we did not have hydroxychloroquine in our protocol because there were like very few studies. Initially in our protocol, we were treating with paracetamol, antihistaminic, either CPM or cetirizine, B-complex, vitamin C, zinc and calcium. This was our last year protocol. But in between, there were studies that zinc and calcium is not very much useful. So we removed that from our protocol. Here the population is undernourished. So since start, we never included ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine in our protocol because there were not like enough evidence to use it. And initially, we were giving, in terms of supplement, B-complex, vitamin C, zinc, and calcium. But by the December, there were studies that zinc and calcium is not useful. So we removed that from protocol. And in second wave, we gave only paracetamol, antihistaminic, either cetirizine or CPM, and then B-complex and vitamin C. So role of vitamin B is also questionable. Here, the population is undernourished and there are not very fresh vegetables available in the villages. And even if they are available, they are costly and affordable. So we are using that. So basically, only four medicines for milder cases. And steroids only when there is oxygen is required. Till then, we were not doing steroids. We were not doing any labs till patient is like moderately symptomatic or severely symptomatic.
Blood thinners also you must be using, right? Anticoagulant.
Blood thinners are indicated only when the patient is on oxygen. Otherwise, no. And when they were admitted, we were using steroids. We were also using remdesivir. For remdesivir, our protocol was a little different. So we did not use it in everyone. So initially, there was shortage. So we were using there is one score, which is called 4C mortality score, to decide on who should receive remdesivir. Afterwards, in the second wave, we did not find that score also very useful. So we used to see response to steroid in first 12 hours. If there is response to steroid, we did not use remdesivir. And if there is no response to steroid, then only we use remdesivir.
Did you find remdesivir useful at all in any of the cases? Was it?
I would say yes. But we did not actually do like a control study for that. So a lot of our patients recovered without remdesivir. Means like those patients who responded to steroids within 12 hours, we did not start them on remdesivir.
Right. I'm asking because the experience across the country is that very wide range of treatment protocols have been used.
I would say it is not a drug to be given to everyone. If there is no response to steroid or there are high risk factors, like there is renal injury with diabetes or there is pregnancy and a severe disease, then only it should be used. But there also, like we had this question, whenever indicated, irrespective of the patient's paying capacity, because the drug has to be procured sometimes even from black market, then the price is varied. But there, we ensured that everyone who required it as per our protocol, they get it. We arranged it somehow, like some of the well-wishers, they promised us to for their care. So we asked patients to pay whatever they can, and otherwise we raised funds for the remdesivir. And the government insurance was paying like 2,000 rupees a day. And it was not enough even for oxygen because the oxygen requirement was high. And if your patient is on oxygen, it will require like 1,000 rupees will be spent on 24 hours oxygen only. So all other cares will not come from Ayushman Bharat scheme. So that has to be like supported from somewhere else.
So Ayushman was supporting only 2,000 rupees per day per patient.
Yeah. Means that is average. So it was different for patients who does not have comorbidity and there were only ward versus the patients who require, there are one or two organ failure and they require support. And obviously for ICU or ventilated patient. So we did not use invasive ventilation. We use only NIV and HFNC.
So people must have spent a lot of money in the private hospitals this time.
Yeah, actually for private hospital, even like a small nursing home, they were asking patients to deposit like 40,000 to 50,000 per day. That is, I'm talking minimum. And like big hospitals, 1 lakh per day. So like a lot of patients, we are hearing now a lot of stories, patient died, but they spent like 1 lakh, 8 lakh.
Well, so what was the basis for such high costs? You know, what did the...
Yeah, so there was no cost standardization in Chhattisgarh. Probably because... lot of like the only hospitals who were providing care apart from government hospital when they got full were private. There was not many surge hospitals, especially in areas of Bilaspur. And the private players, they charged, and there was not much regulation. And I think government was not in a position also. So I would not blame them for that. There was not enough preparation for the surge.
They could not implement that. Even if they had regulated, they could not. So
the cost capping could not have happened because the health infrastructure of Chhattisgarh is not robust like Maharashtra or Tamil Nadu, where there is a lot of private players and you can regulate them. If here one of the hospitals says, okay, then we will not admit patients, where will patients go?
But they could have been ordered to admit also.
Yeah, actually, there were orders on paper, but the actual implementation was not there.
You talked about TB patients, the numbers coming down by half.
Yeah.
So in this course of this 1 year, what has happened to the non-COVID patients? That is, before COVID came, you had a regular flow of patients for various things. What were the major cases that you used to see before COVID?
Yeah, so we have a lot of non-communicable diseases coming to us regularly, visiting us for like several years. We saw because of lockdown, patient couldn't come. There were two deaths because of uncontrolled epilepsy. One patient had epilepsy in the night and had aspiration and died. Another had epilepsy while he was taking bath and he got drowned. So these were like regular patients coming to us. And many such deaths, I would say. A lot of patients coming in diabetes, ketoacidosis, which was well controlled on medicines. A TB problem I talked about, the diagnosis reduced to half only. Now we are seeing patients coming much sicker, very thin, with duration of illness 1 year, more than 1 year. So they are coming now. A lot of cancer patients actually couldn't come and they have their disease worsened. A lot of them are now coming only in a stage where we can do only palliation. No treatment can be offered to them.
Also, maybe cardiac patients also, perhaps.
Cardiac patients, sickle cell disease patients. A lot of cardiac patients are coming with fluid overload and which were earlier well controlled. A lot of patients with sickle cell anemia, which were regular on medicines, they did not require blood. Now coming with very low hemoglobin and they are requiring blood.
So it has basically increased the non-COVID complications.
Yeah. Last year, we saw our maternity services utilization was 200%. So our usual numbers, they got doubled during non-COVID times. Because of the fear of unknown last year, all the nursing homes, even in private nursing homes, were closed. So we got patients back referrals from Bilaspur also. And our numbers were doubled last year. And this year, what we saw, nursing waves were also open. And the second wave, COVID positive deliveries were only happening at districts. So a lot of patients delivered at their home only. So we, in our village program area, saw 50% reduction in institutional deliveries.
Were there any complications because of that?
Yeah. Because of COVID, actually, the pregnant women is one of the subgroup that suffered a lot because of COVID. So when they were positive, they were denied delivery at subcenter, at PHC, CHC, and they were directly referred to the district hospital. So in entire Bilaspur and Mungeli district, the normal delivery used to happen at district hospital and cesarean section used to happen only at a medical college there. And we saw 3-4 women who came to us in full labor and we delivered the baby. And the babies, because of hypoxia and mother's illness, required resuscitation. And then the baby also could not be admitted because the treatment facilities for COVID positive babies were also only at district hospital. So that baby has to be referred there, and a very poorer outcome for the pregnant women and babies. Then people started thinking, okay, then it's like same as what care we are getting at home. So same like those babies survive, will survive at home also. So why take trouble of going to this hospital, then being referred to like another hospital and then third referral hospital and then getting COVID delivery there. So instead, like, why not go and get delivered at home only? So this, I would say, is a learning for third wave that we have to plan for deliveries. I would say, like now, we have every subcenter or every delivery point in government system compatible with delivering a HIV positive baby. So similarly, like in the preparation of third wave, we should have or we should aim for delivery points compatible for delivering COVID positive patients.
Okay. What is the situation with vaccination right now? How much?
So I would say the coverage is about 10%. So initially, like in our area, what we witnessed, so high-risk patients, because we were visiting them and telling them, in our villages, a lot of them got vaccinated, the first dose. And then there was like huge misinformation and a lot of people thought the fever they are getting is because of vaccine, which actually was COVID they were getting, and a lot of villages had COVID. Most of the times it was not immediately after vaccination. It was like 2 weeks after vaccination, 3 weeks after vaccination. But a lot of people got COVID. They got, and we know like COVID gives you fatigue, body ache, more severe than your experience with the past upper respiratory fevers. A lot of people thought it is because of injection, because it is because of vaccine. So they were blaming vaccine and not ready to take second dose. And this information also spread to like other age groups, and 18 plus also are not ready for getting vaccinated. And a lot of misinformation, this WhatsApp University is spreading, I would say. A lot of misinformation on social media. And people, one, do not have a trusted source to ask. The access to information is limited. The reach of misinformation is more than the trusted information. So that is a challenge we have to deal with. And it won't happen with just like mass media messaging. It has to be very individualized. I would say there should be like people going and talking either door to door or having village meetings. And then there has to be this trust relationship. So this vaccination coverage, the initial vaccination drive, first is coincided with the COVID wave. People who got vaccine, they were not asked if they were having symptoms or not. And then everyone was vaccinated, even if they had symptoms. So some of the patients who had some mild symptoms of COVID, they got severe symptoms, and some of them also died. And people thought like it is the vaccine which is causing COVID and deaths. And also, they were not given paracetamol tablets. Like a lot of people get fever for 48 hours after vaccination. And they have that feeling that we did not receive any medicine. No one come to us. No one asked us if you are having any problem after vaccination. And some of them went to hospitals after getting fever for vaccine. They were not satisfied with the care they got. So all these things led to a lot of misinformation and distrust with the vaccination. So there are like rumors, like people want, government wants to kill us. That's why we are being forced to take vaccine. And like many, many other things, vaccines are causing cancers. There is a 5% poison mixed in the vaccine. Vaccine will lead to infertility. Like this, lot of misinformation is there.
And this is all being spread through the mobile phone network.
Yeah, so mostly WhatsApp. Once there is some information is there, and in villages, everyone spices it up and then spreads it further.
You've been working for many years in the kind of context where you are. What would you say, looking at the scale of the problems and the kind of problems that are there in dealing with the pandemic is one thing, but even without the pandemic, the health issues in country like India, particularly in places like Chhattisgarh, are very severe. So if you were to look ahead and say what kind of policies are required, what would you recommend? More long-term kind of.
Yeah. So I would say this empowering frontline workers is very much important. Like even in this wave, a lot of health workers, government health workers, they did not get face shield, they did not get masks, there were not enough supply of medications to them, and they were asked to spread awareness about vaccine or to monitor fever patients or to provide number of cases to the district authorities. So when there are no supplies, the health worker cannot go and ask for this information without helping people. So without giving medicines, she cannot go and she cannot ask just information. So people will shout at her. So this was a common scenario. So I would say everything and steps has to be taken and the proper planning has to happen. A lot of this planning used to happen at the district level, but no one was going out in the field and confront a person who were being blamed or who was shouting at a village health worker. So they need support. So that has to be there. Also, the job aids has to be developed for empowering her, like simple breath counter to measure respiratory rate. Or like we also have developed one app, which is called Swash app, which is an Android phone-based technique to diagnose lung involvement earlier in the COVID so that patient can be referred at appropriate time. So such tools to empower the village health worker is important. The community engagement aspect, I would say, is very important because COVID doesn't impact only health. It also impacts other sectors. It impacts nutrition. By also impacting on livelihood, it impacted education. So there has to be decentralized planning, and to have decentralized planning and decentralized education, the community engagement, so local village action committees or whatever committees that are functional in the villages, that has to be activated. And that is I would say a long-term planning is required, not only for the COVID, but for anything that can come up in the next decade. Like with school lockdown or school shutdown, there was a lot of children, they were not getting educated. So who will cater to their need? So each time if we are looking at a central government and asking them to plan, to roll out and to implement, so till the problem gets rolled out in the villages, there is something new comes up. So to have that decentralized planning and execution, these local people, like local teachers, local ashas, they has to be empowered. And the technology should be used to empower them rather than to replace them. So a lot of these technology startups are coming up. But they are looking to replace them. Like the telehealth is coming up. And there are doctors are trying to connect to patients directly on mobile. But the history cannot be properly elicited. The examination cannot happen. But if there is a trained health worker there and there are tools to support her, this problem can be very well managed, is what I think.
Has there been an impact on nutrition because of the economic downturn, but also, you know, these are very malnourished kind of populations, perhaps?
Yeah. So in COVID, I would say, means this was an observation to us also. So BMI really matters in the even outcome of COVID. So patients who are very undernourished, thin built, and if there are two patients involvement, similar respiratory rate, but one has a good muscle mass and another has a very poor muscle mass. The person with good muscle mass has a very good chance, I would say twice more chance of getting discharged and getting home than the person who is undernourished. So I would say this is very a deep-rooted problem of undernutrition that is there, and it flares up COVID. And undernutrition, severe undernutrition is also a comorbidity for COVID that has to be addressed. And the PDS system, like in first wave, it was collapsed. The second wave, it was managed very well. And everyone had got their rations. There was no discontinuity. It was very good. In first wave, we have heard stories that like people were not getting salt or they were black marketing of oils. Second wave, this did not happen. So I think we had learned from the first wave about this. And hopefully for the next wave, we learn more. And similarly for oxygen, I would say we were demanding oxygen concentrator for patients who had chronic respiratory failure because of tuberculosis. But this was never addressed. We wrote letters to collector for providing oxygen concentrator to some of our patients. But like only one patient got it through some NGO, but otherwise like no one got. This time when this problem started affecting middle class or even rich people, the oxygen concentrator just flew in. So the concentrator or the technology which we were initially demanding for the rural people, marginalized people, that was never available. The technology was available, but there was not funding or there was no attention for it. But ultimately, like when the problem affects middle class, then all the attention goes toward that. So it is a perfect example of inequity that we have in our systems.